The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to another edition of Mission Minded. Keep your mind on your mission, your mind. He's Michael Coleman, the Jimmy Hill Mission. We talk about the non-for-profits. We talk about the Jimmy Hill Mission. Michael, how you doing, brother? What's going on?
Doing fantastic. Just blessed to be here for another week.
I love it. We love having you on, of course. So we run this show every single Wednesday, live twice. And you can also check us out on Spotify. Go to Spotify, search Tony Curry Radio and Mission Minded. And you can see all of our shows, well over 100 different podcasts. Everything from Blues Almighty to Mission Minded to Adaptogen, you name it, it's all over the place. You can listen to all of our shows and certainly all the previous episodes of Mission Minded here with Michael Coleman. It's interesting. I was on your website the other day. And I saw your podcast, the Jimmy Hill Mission Podcast, which is not the same as Mission Minded. And I listened to a couple of episodes. It's done really, really well. The whole sound effects and everything. You close your eyes, you listen to 22 or 23 minutes of some of your success stories. And so I thought that would be a great thing to get into here on Mission Minded because, you know, we talk about the struggles and we talk about the addictions and we talk about how people hit rock bottom and how they show up at Jimmy Hill Mission. And there were two aspects I wanted to get to. First of all, some of your most successful stories you've had come out of Jimmy Hill Mission. And second of all, what happens as a follow-up once people leave Jimmy Hill Mission? We always say this in AA or the 12-step program, you don't get a diploma and you're like, congratulations, you made it the 12 steps. See you later. Have a nice life. It is a lifetime of recovery. And yes, you will eventually recoil from that flame to the point where it becomes second nature not to get addicted to drugs or alcohol anymore. But it is certainly something you use we always talk about the toolbox, your tools and your tool chest. But I always am interested to see what kind of work in progress you use in order to follow up with some of your best clientele. So I would love for you to share some of your best success stories of Jimmy Hill Mission. I know they come from all walks of life, all social economic aspects, and it's really amazing. So I'd love to hear some of those stories today.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start off by, it's really important that the audience understands our approach is what produces the results that I think we're showing. And you have to understand when you're dealing with somebody with addiction, the problem for so many people who don't have a background in treating this, they look at it as, well, you need to stop drinking. So just abstinence. How do we get you to stop drinking? Well, we deal with so many people who may not be in what we call active addiction. They may not be staying out drinking. They may not be using drugs, but their life still resembles that of an addict. Mm-hmm. So even though they may not be using, their life is manifested itself as if somebody who is using. And so you get in, so you have to understand that it's not, it has to go way beyond that. You can make somebody quit drinking. I mean, let me back up on that.
Sure.
You can't make somebody, but if the goal is to quit drinking, people can play that game. And we just see something way beyond that because we understand that it's not just all of a sudden you come along and you just, it's very rare that somebody just, hey, I just enjoy this alcohol and now it's out of control. What we encounter are people who are coming from the streets, who have deep, deep traumas that usually go back into their childhood years. And so what happens is they do not have a sufficient support system. And so these traumas are just compiled upon each other. And they just don't have the coping mechanisms of how to process it in a healthy way. So all of us have experienced pain in our life, whether it's a loss of somebody that's critical to us. Just think back through all the painful processes. Well, imagine if that was coming up in your mind and you couldn't move on beyond those events. So what we found is that people, in order to deal with that successfully, lots of times will turn to substances, alcohol, drugs, or whatever. And that's how they cope with life. Well, then you take an otherwise normal person who was going to work every day and they start turning to drugs and alcohol. And then all of a sudden, everything around there, they get fired from work. They may start chasing that high. Maybe they've used up all their money. And so then they're, now they're in trouble with police because they try to rob, steal, embezzle from work. Mm-hmm. Their relationships, you know, their spouse, they can't parent anymore. And so what ends up happening is they throw them out on the street. And when we see people on the street, we tend to look at them and go, oh, here's somebody just shiftless, doesn't want to work, and all that. And what we fail to really sit down and contemplate is it's very likely this person has a family waiting on them that had to separate from this person to maintain their own healthy perspective and just said, hey, we can't do life with you as you are. And so they remove themselves from that person, and this is what's left over. So if you understand it from that perspective, then how you go into treatment will be shaped by that perspective. So let me give you an example. When we see somebody, I start off with the idea that this is somebody of value. Mm-hmm. It's not somebody who just needs services. He's not a bum. This is somebody who is accountable for his decisions. So I'm not at all trying to remove responsibility and accountability, but it very likely began when he's trying to deal with a much deeper problem with which he was not equipped, or he or she was not equipped to deal with. So I try to get out of let's remove judgment from the situation as to how they got here. The bottom line is they are here. They're a person of value. I don't believe God created anybody to be that, to live in that world. And so I want to come alongside of them and say, okay, what is the most effective way to lift them out of this condition? And so just in a nutshell, real quick, I won't go into much detail, but the goal is we want them to go from where they are into a self-sufficient and productive citizen. And sometimes we have to understand that that's a 2 to 3 year journey. Yeah. But if we're going to be serious about helping people, about changing lives, transforming lives, then we have to be in from the beginning of that journey to the end of the journey. And not that their journey ends, but our supportive role in that journey may get extended. So
that's an incredible investment, by the way. I mean, it really is. I mean, you've stated this at the beginning of the show. There's no Band-Aid here. I mean, this is because they're going to come back. This is not a Band-Aid. This is going in and actually extracting some of those demons and trying to help these people so they can live that more. And that's a lifestyle change, and it does take time.
That's right. So you got to understand what happens in the brain. So we have pathways that our neurons flow down. We myelinate these pathways in our brains so that, and everybody has done this, that based on your response to certain stimuli, you have a default position. So let's just say every time you walk into a place and you smell a certain smell, it may make you nauseous. And so the result is you flee out of that. It's just you don't have to think about it. It's just your default position. And when you do that over and over and over, you myelinate pathways to where that now governs your behavior. It's just a default position. Mm-hmm. So to change behavior, you have to remyelinate new pathways. And so that takes the human brain. It can take 2 to 3 years to myelinate new pathways. So I can put somebody through treatment. I can give them all the information. I can be there with them. And like ours is a 4-month intensive residential recovery. But if I turn around and put them out in the environment, say, okay, now you've been through recovery. Well, then what tends to happen is because they know what to do intellectually, but their defaults are still wired in their brain. Yep. Those pathways have not changed yet. It doesn't mean they can't change. They can't, because they've trained their brain to respond this way. Now they have to retrain their brain. And that's a journey, and it takes support, and it takes care, and it takes all those things to truly transform somebody's life. And but you have to, this is why I don't want people to misunderstand me. I'm thankful for every service that's out there that can at least advance the cause of recovery. But you have the more clinical settings, and we're clinically structured, but you have the more clinical settings that, you know, will cost insurance. If you have insurance, they're like, and we have them here in Alabama that, hey, we can give you treatment for 17 days.
Yeah.
And your insurance pays over that, let's say $15,000 for those 17 days. Now, everything they give you of that information is good information. But you are not going to myelinate new pathways nor deal with childhood traumas effectively in 17 days. Now, if you take that and turn that into intensive outpatient treatment and all that, yes. But the bottom line is what the majority of our people need. They don't have those kind of resources. And even then, it's not sufficient.
Yeah.
So we have committed ourselves to coming alongside of people and saying, I don't know what your trauma is. I don't know what your brokenness is. I don't know what. All I know is I'm willing to unpack life with you. And as long as you put one step in front of the other, we'll go down there. And so what we've seen is phenomenal results. Everybody's heard, oh, it takes an addict 7 tries. Well, when they're only getting 17 days of information, lots of times it does say, we're not seeing those kind of same results. It doesn't mean everybody goes to our program, stays clean, or is successful. But what we're seeing is our rates really climb up high into meaningful change and meaningful restoring purpose and dignity to our clients' lives.
He's a Michael Coleman, of course, with the Jimmy Hill Mission, and he's the executive director and a good friend of the show. And, of course, we do a show called Mission Monday. You can hear it live every Wednesday here exclusively on Tony Curry Radio twice, and then again on Spotify. You can go back and listen to all of our previous episodes and search Mission Monday on Tony Curry Radio on Spotify. You know, if you don't believe it's a disease, go watch The Broken Brain. It's pretty amazing how the brain does work, and it does take, you talk about these pathways, it takes at least 90 days to actually start feeling a little different after you've been through some type of addictive property. And we always talk about too, and I've heard this, you know, being a sober drunk or a dry drunk, just because you're sober and you're not drinking anymore doesn't necessarily mean you're happy. It's a lifestyle change. Not always better, it's different, and it gives you the tools to deal with a lot of those tragedies and those trigger moments, so you don't fall back or relapse into whatever your drug of choice was. I want to get back into this, and we'll get back into this next week, because I think we could go a couple of weeks on this, and I think it's really interesting. But I do want to get into some of your success stories, because I've listened to some of your podcast, and they're heart-wrenching. There's some heart-wrenching moments, certainly with the sound effects. I'm like, goodness gracious. And the saving grace is I know it's going to turn into a good thing by the end of the 22 or 23 minutes of podcast. But I would love to hear some of your success stories that you've had at Jimmy Hill Mission, and maybe pick a couple that you just did not see coming.
Yeah. So, I mean, you would think some people are just unredeemable.
Yes.
And that reminds me of a guy named Gary. And the reason we know a lot of these stories is because when we graduate after 4 months, they get up and they, for 2 to 3 minutes at graduation, they tell us these stories. And we don't really know the depth of their brokenness, because when they come in, they're not interested in telling us. But they're so proud of how far they come in the 4 months, they're really happy to share. So Gary gets up there, and he just blew us away at graduation. He had been a member of the Hell's Angels for 25 years. Oh. He had been in addiction at 46 for the last 46 years. You want to talk about a life and exposure. He was 14 years old, sleeping under a park bench. And that's where he witnessed his first murder. He spent 17 years in prison. When he came to us, he had an ankle bracelet on. But I just remember him standing up and being so positive. And it was funny, because I know all of our listeners, this is not designed to be a faith-based, but we, are, of course, are a faith-based ministry, and he just stood up graduation and said, hey man, this Jesus thing is real. And what he meant by that was they were experiencing the care that we taught. We were backing up. We said, hey, we're going to love you in spite of where you've been. We're going to care for you. We do that because we feel like that's how God has treated us, and so we're going to treat you the same way. And he had really felt that, and it really impacted his life. So what did he do? He wanted to take all his life experiences, and this is a very common response. It's like, hey, I want to go into pastoral counseling, or I want to go because I want to take my experiences and my transformation and help others through that journey. And that's very fulfilling for a lot of people. I mean, I'm not much different myself. I had a pretty rough background, and I find a lot of fulfillment in being open and honest about what I've been through to try to help other people overcome that. So, but I'm going to tell you about another guy that came through about a month ago. His name was Josh. And sometimes we see this stuff happen all the time, but he began to talk about how he basically was padlocked into his room. His parents fed him sandwiches underneath the door of his room. So he was completely ostracized from any human contact for years. He tried to commit suicide. Just so many things. As a matter of fact, I've seen recently, it just seems like it comes up every day in the news. This parent beat this 6-month-old to death.
And I know.
Just the amount of depravity out there and what's and what people will do to their children. And what we get is are those that happens to, but then, you know, the parents may get arrested, parents may get away with it, or they may escape that environment, but there's really no process to where they can deal with the grief, the loss, the shame, all of that. And those traumas, then, like, I don't have any way to deal with it, so then I got to try to escape from the pain. And again, that's why you turn to drugs and alcohol. But Josh, I thought was so interesting. He is now working. He's doing very well. But he was just determined that he wanted to be a security guard. And so we just ask about that. You know, what is this obsession you have with being a security guard? I mean, nothing, that's good, honest work, nothing wrong with it at all. But, you know, you could be a lot of things. He said, no one protected me when I was young. And now I want to have a life where it's my job to protect others.
That's awesome.
And you just see this taking his experience and saying, yes, it happened, but he was not going to let that experience define him. As a matter of fact, it gave him the impetus to step forward and say, I am determined to use the rest of my life to be a protector of people and protector of things, because I know what it's like when you don't have a protector, when you're vulnerable and people, you know, just abuse you.
That's a great story. Michael Coleman joins us here, Mission Minded. It runs every Wednesday here live on Tony Curry Radio. And of course, also on Spotify, search Tony Curry Radio. And you can listen to all of our past episodes right here. He's from the Jimmy Hill Mission, the executive director. We're talking about some of the Jimmy Hill Mission's great success stories. And you can go to jimmyhillmission.com or .org and listen to their weekly podcast. They're great podcasts. They're done very, very well. It's interesting because when you talk about someone, and particularly in Gary's and Josh's situation, there was childhood trauma from the get-go. How do you approach a client like that who's been traumatized for 30, 40 years, as opposed to, say, a client who's had it pretty good, who had a good job, who had a wife, had a children, had a nice house, and then eventually just sank into the doldrums of alcoholism unbeknownst to them? And I always talk about it being kind of like the alligator by the lake. You know, I'm always walking around the lake and I'm tapping on the nose and I'm hopping it over and I'm swimming on the other side. And one day it just pulls you by the leg and grips you and pulls you in. You can't get away. How is your approach different from a therapeutic standpoint, where you realize, hey, you've got someone that you could not turnkey, but you can flip this around? If you can get them off alcohol and get them recovered, they more than likely get back to being more self-sufficient, back with their family, as opposed to someone who's had a lifelong trauma and really just they knew nothing else. I mean, to be a Hell's Angel for 25 years or to be fed sandwiches under your door, that probably became commonplace for those individuals. How do you change that?
Yeah, so it's such a great question. And we have learned that so much of it is understanding, first of all, there are things that we don't sometimes even think of as trauma, that are trauma. So sometimes we think of trauma as big deal. Like, we had a guy who came to us. Now imagine this, you're 9 years old, you're inside of your house. You're just sitting there like a normal 9-year old. Your mother and father were on the roof, as he described it, either installing an antenna or adjusting the antenna, and it hit the power line and killed them both.
Oh.
So in 1 minute, you're sitting there watching TV or inside your house playing. Next minute, you are – so you've got that issue. Then you get put in an aunt's house who is going to – you know, it's hard for her to love you with the same love and care because she's got her own children. And so you feel that whole growing up, and somebody say, well, at least she had a loving home. Yeah, that's true. but it wasn't his parents, and he never got the opportunity to grieve. So that's a lingering thing. And then he wasn't treated, at least from his perspective, like he was really part of the family. I mean, he wasn't abused. So he said, well, you weren't abused. That can't be too traumatic. But sometimes we underestimate the effect of some seemingly small things because each person is different. Like you'll have some people that go through incredible traumas. I mean, I've been before and I've heard one woman go through all her thing. And I said, if this is my life, I just don't know that I would still be here. I couldn't tell you that I would not have killed myself. I don't know that I have the strength to withstand all that you've withstood. Mm-hmm. But there's some people who can do that. And for whatever reason, they're able to transition into a healthy life and cope with it in a healthy way. But there's some, I mean, it's all over the spectrum. Some can have seemingly minor things to us, but it actually crumbles down around them their whole life. And so one of the things we can't evaluate somebody else's trauma through our own eyes and determine whether it's legitimate or not. So let me just give you two quick examples. I'll use one from my own self. Mm-hmm. So my mother and father divorced when I was 7. And you say, okay, well, divorce is common. Well, in 1972, it wasn't common. I was in a small little private school with about 30 kids, and I was the only one who didn't have a two-parent family. Mm-hmm. So nobody else in my reality, adult or child, could relate to those emotions that I was feeling as my mom and dad used me as a ping pong to go back and forth as a weapon against each other. So it created uncertainty, it created fear, it created doubt. And then you bring in, they each got remarried, so you got stepbrothers, stepsisters, you got stepparents, and some not so kind. And so you're living in a non-caring environment, or it feels like a non-caring environment, almost like you're living with people who are not your mother and father, and you suffer all sorts of things. So you may say, yeah, but that's not the end of the world. And I was able to, in part because of the military, leave that environment and adapt fairly well. But others simply can't because they don't have those same.
Is that things. Why you got in the military?
I got in the military because my life, you know, I recognized early on I had missed so much school. Education at the time was not a priority to me. And so I recognized that I had to move forward in life. And so the military was really my only option.
Yeah.
And thankfully I ended up staying 21 years because I fell in love with the structure it provided me. It helped me mature. It gave me a framework by which to move forward. But again, that's not the answer for everybody. It was the answer for me. So when you're going in, you know, we have to understand we get extroverts, we get introverts, we get people with serious trauma that need just a little bit of care. We have people with just a little bit of trauma that need serious care. It's all over the place. So it boils down to this. The only way you're not going to fix long-term the addiction issues. That's really how the problem manifests itself. So you can't focus on how a problem manifests itself. What you have to do is get to the core issue. And the core issues are the underlying traumas and brokenness. And the only way you're going to get somebody to do that is if you create a relationship of trust. You got to understand, when somebody's coming to us from the streets and you're surviving on the street, you don't trust anybody. Your head's on a swivel. You know, people will lie, cheat, and steal. People knock you over the head for 50 cents. And so you come in here not trusting anybody. So we can't, like, day one go in there and say, hey, tell me about all you've been through in your life. That usually doesn't come out for weeks. But we have a process to where we first get to prove, hey, we're in this for you. And we tell you that, and you don't trust that, and rightly so. But you're going to learn to trust in it because you're going to see it every day over a prolonged period of time. And then through our process, it's going to be a lot more natural where you're going to feel in our individual counseling, our group therapy, all that kind of stuff, to where you can share some of those things because you are in a supportive environment that allows you the space to deal with the brokenness, to bring about the healing. Because you got to understand, you can't deal with trauma when you're out there on the street surviving. You have to get to a safe place where I know I'm going to be fed, I know I'm going to be housed, I know I'm going to be cared for, I know I'm not going to get knocked over the head. I know these people, if I will provide for me anything that I need in order to get better. And when you live in that for a while and you can begin to relax, and then the natural brokenness the things you're dealing with internally begin to come out little by little. And when that happens, now we're getting to the core issues. And so once you teach healthy coping mechanisms for that, now they are not as likely, when they are triggered by that event, thinking of that event or seeing something that reminds them, to escape it through alcohol and drugs. They know what it is, they recognize it for what it is, and they can face it without destroying their life. And that's part of the journey. It's not all of the journey, but it's part of the journey. But it has to come from a relationship of trust where they can be honest about who they are and what they've been through, whether they're a perpetrator or a victim. And we help them navigate that with zero judgment. Our only goal is, hey, we just want to get you to that better place.
And for the most part, in a lot of ways, this may be the first time they've ever had someone trust them in their lives. I mean, they don't even know what trust is.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Imagine the going back to Josh and the sandwich, being fed on the sandwiches. He's never known what love is.
Yeah.
And so when he came here and we tell him, hey, Josh, we love you, man. We care about you. Well, you have to understand he's going to filter that through his experience. If he ever did have a parent that told him he loved him, he'd say, wow, I hope you don't feed me through the door, because that's my parents who said they love me. That's how they fed me. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot to overcome. And so it's very important. This is why I have to emphasize to the staff, with our clients that we're dealing with, it's like a skit. I don't know how many of our listeners have ever watched like an abused dog. I used to watch this on The Dog Whisperer. Mm-hmm. And he'd be in a cage, and they couldn't get him out of the cage. And so he would get in the cage, but he would have the back to the dog. And as he would scoot in the cage, the dog would go all the way back to the back corner, just shaking. And he would just slowly scoot back, and he'd wait for a second. And then, so he never looked at the dog. He scooted up to him, and then he was able to then reach out and pet him and hold him. And, of course, it doesn't fix him in one sitting. But it's that kind of thing. You have to be the proactive one. We don't have we have expectations of our clients to move forward, but the true care aspect falls on us. In other words, we have to be the ones who are gentle. We have to be the ones who are careful about what we say. We have to be, because we're trying to coax them into a different reality than some have ever experienced. And you don't do that with your arms flailing. You do it in a very gentle, caring way to bring them along successfully.
Michael, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you sharing your personal story, which is great, which I did not know. And it's great. And it just, you see so much at the Jimmy Hell Mission, and you're all in. You're so engaged. And I know you will continue to talk about the love and the trust that you provide at Jimmy Hell Mission. And I always ask, the first question I ever asked Dr. Josh Klapa when I met him 6 or 7 years ago was as humans, are we more resilient or fragile? Because in any given day, we are resilient in so many different ways, but yet we are so stinking fragile in so many different ways. And, you know, just based off your story, we all have that nightmare thought of what would happen if I lost my child. And I think a lot of us think to ourselves, Lord, I don't know if I could live. I don't know if I could continue to live. Yet that's where that fight or flight aspect comes into your life. And based off the love and the trust you're getting through the people around you and your resources, dictates whether you're going to make it or not, and whether you can see hope through all the tragedy that people go through. So I applaud your efforts, and it's fantastic. Next week, I want to get back into the addictive aspects of it. I think because of COVID, we still haven't seen a lot of the repercussions of what COVID-19 has done to this country and this world over the last couple of years. I think we're like, hooty hoo, it's all over again. We're not wearing masks and everything else. But I think a lot of people found a lot of vices that they took into their own hands, a lot of self-medication the last couple of years. So I want to get into some addiction stuff. But great show as always, man. Thank you so much for your time. You're the man. And we'll catch up next week. Thank you, brother.
Absolutely, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.